We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We're back live with more of Anthony Herron and Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I don't get angry. When you choose to pick up the cross, I think you go through a lot. And it's up to me to stay joyful. It's a difference between happy and being joyful. And I'm joyful. It's one time in my life where I'm actually at peace with what I'm doing. And I'm actually happy. And I'm joyful. Even through the hard times and people talking. But for me, I mean, I'm secure in myself. And I know what I can do on the field. I know I can process very well. And I know I'm very smart. So you can't play at Ohio State and not be smart. And for the people, for the SU test, man, it is what it is. It happened, and I'm willing to stick up, and I don't have no excuses. So I know what I can do on that field.
Is it accurate?
That was CJ Stroud right there after he scored that super low score on that test. What is it called? The Wonderlic test?
The S2 test. Yeah. The older test was the Wonderlic, okay. And now they've got what was supposed to be kind of the more modern and accurate version of the Wonderlic, this S2 test.
It sounds so foolish. You got grown men that, and I'm not even trying to say it in a negative way, I'm more so saying, like, you know, athletes, they're trying to skate them through so many things in life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, think about the people that don't end up taking the S2 test that have literally gotten pushed through high school, college, tutors, people, I'm doing air quotes, tutors, right, exactly, assistants. And it's like, and then you give them a test and you're so shocked that they didn't necessarily perform as well as you wanted them to. Mm. Get out of here with that. CJ Stroud having the lowest one. I had Sean Sears, our producer today, doing a fantastic job. I had to pull that clip because it came up on my Twitter feed and I was like, wow, what an answer, right? Because he's better than me. And I would have gotten so defensive. I'm like, what? Man, anybody worried about no damn test, man? Give me the football. See me on the thing. Man, whoever made that test, I would have said all of that. He's just like, when you carry the cross, there's a difference between joy and happiness. And I'm telling you right now, the people that did it, like, I was like, wow. Those words would have never been put together and came out of my mouth after something like that. And it is really impressive to see CJ Stroud kind of handle that. And I think ultimately, it's what Kyle Long was talking about, Ant, where, you know, in Chicago, you're going to get a guy like Caleb Williams. And he was saying that, you know, the superstardom of that player, right? And I did this exercise yesterday where I was like, who's the last superstar that played for the Bears? And I'm like, where are we? And I actually even went beyond it and I said Chicago sports.
Okay.
And people were, you know, texting in, Devin Hester, Gabe, what are you talking about? Brian Urlacher, bro, what are you talking about?
Mm.
And they weren't necessarily understanding what I was saying, where I'm talking about like superstar, pop culture icon, superstar, like a LeBron would be, or like a Patrick Mahomes would be. Mm. I'm trying to give different, you know, examples in sports. And somebody finally texted in and understood what I was really trying to say, which is, you know, no one had been in a national commercial. A national Subway commercial, a national, you know, Pizza Hut commercial where the special snack is named after them or something like that. And Caleb Williams kind of is that. And you know, Kyle Long was pointing out, to just put the bow on it, saying how, you know, he is primed for that.
Mm-hmm.
He's dealt with it already.
Yep.
In order to be successful in Chicago, which I loved him talking about that, you know, in order to be successful in Chicago, you have to be able to manage and handle all that well.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt confident that he would be able to do that. And yeah, it was just a lot of good stuff from Kyle Long about that. But there's another quarterback that you were mentioning before the break, JJ McCarthy, where you said you hope he doesn't get overdrafted. What would what would overdrafted for JJ McCarthy look like?
I think he is a no doubt first round talent. Not only physically, but mentally, emotionally. You know, the stage that we saw, you know, CJ Stroud have to handle at Ohio State, where his first year as a starter in Columbus, where you're following up the legacy of Justin Fields and how amazing he was during his time at Ohio State. CJ Stroud steps in the following year, and there was kind of a new standard of production that was expected for Ohio State quarterbacks after the 2 years that Justin Fields was there. And so CJ Stroud, in what became a super deep quarterback room and a Ryan Day offense that revamped the way that we viewed the passing attack in Columbus, CJ Stroud had this sort of answer for all of that. And so every incomplete pass, the first couple of months that CJ Stroud was a starter, folks are trying to figure out, well, should Quinn Ewers be there instead, or this other five-star quarterback that's sitting there waiting on their opportunity? It's like every time CJ Stroud was a little bit off on a series, and the fanaticism of Ohio State fans would just take over Twitter, and that the backups are trending on Twitter when CJ Stroud just looked a little bit off. And really, most of his 2 years, like his second year after he had proven what he proved in the first year, it calmed down a little bit. But still, even in his second season in college, that the hottest of seats essentially for quarterbacks has become being the Ohio State quarterback and the expectations associated with it. But so he's had to handle that stage for years in college. And then now we've seen in 1 year in a rookie season in the National Football League how well he's handled that. Now, being a quarterback of the Houston Texans is a different beast than being a quarterback of the Chicago Bears. And the scrutiny, the caller earlier, I think it was Andy, was the caller earlier who mentioned Chicago, number three media market in the country, but Chicago, the biggest single-team NFL market, which I thought was a great point. And to be able to handle that, to manage that, like I referenced earlier, part of the respect that so many people had for Justin Fields was having to handle that in the midst of team struggles for several years. Now, if Caleb Williams comes in and he's stepping into a situation where there will be team expectations, and so if Caleb Williams is seen as a guy detracting from the success of the team, if the Bears aren't winning and it's viewed as this rookie quarterback being a part of what's holding Bears fans back, holding Matt Eberflus back from this proposed success that they've been building towards for several years, then I do think, yes, that'll be difficult to handle. Now, he has been in L.A., and being the quarterback at USC, there is a level of heat that comes with that, but it is different. And I was struck by, even at the Combine, where that was really the first time that a lot of folks had heard from and really paid close attention to how Caleb Williams carried himself. For months, it was kind of like this Caleb Williams caricature that a lot of folks hadn't really heard from him, because he's not a guy who goes out of his way to be out in the public and be given press conferences every time he can and post himself talking about this and that on IG every other night. A lot of folks had barely heard what Caleb Williams' voice sounded like. And then that time he stepped to the podium. You and I have talked about it since then when he was in Indy. And folks were like, oh, he's like a regular person who handles himself well and looks calm, composed, comfortable in his own skin, and left there very impressed and didn't necessarily know what to expect from him. But that does show the difference in that, where Justin Fields, when he was at Ohio State, he was on Good Morning America being interviewed by Michael Strahan and Robin Roberts about bringing back the college football season during COVID. like it is a different type of scrutiny for certain programs, and whether it's Pacific time zone or late night games or whatever, for whatever reason, a lot of folks hadn't heard as much from Caleb. So he has handled the LA market and a big stage and been on national ad campaigns. So I'm confident when he comes to Chicago, when and if and when, whatever, he comes, if he's the Bears quarterback, I think he will handle this well. But it is a step up. It is a step up from the type of scrutiny and the heat of the scrutiny that he dealt with in college.
Yeah, and I could see that. And I could imagine where a guy like J.J. McCarthy might have that same scrutiny, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if he's overdrafted.
Yeah.
And that's why I
to get back to the question you posed me that I went away from. Yeah.
Hey, we don't talk about that. And boy, I was swinging you back up right there.
Right. It's like, oh, yeah, you asked me about J.J., didn't you?
Don't say the secrets. We got good chemistry over here, bro. I got us.
Right. But no, J.J., we've talked about it off air a little bit. Lucas Van Ness, a defensive lineman from Iowa, that to me is a similar comp. Very different position, but Lucas Van Ness was a guy I hope didn't get overdrafted. And I think around 13th in the first round, you know, it's probably, if I was just like the czar of the entire draft, I wouldn't have slotted Lucas Van Ness as the 13th best player.
Right.
In last year's draft, but then he steps into a situation in Green Bay. You got a good offense and, you know, expectations for a quarterback and all these types of things. So, you know, he was a part of a rotation for a talented Packers defensive front. So it's different. Quarterback, if you go top 10, where some folks are talking about J.J. McCarthy, that means you're going to be expected to play right away. And I don't see him being prepared for that. I don't see that being best for him.
Can you see, though, where, like, let's say if it is the Vikings. Mm. Right, let's just throw a random team out there,
yep.
And not the Giants.
Yeah,
don't you think that, or not? Don't you think shouldn't the path be? Hey, you're coming in, but because like, I feel like everything's just happened. So, like in the last couple of years, what has gone on with the quarterbacks would then show whoever takes J.J. McCarthy slow and steady is going to win this race and not.
But you could say the same thing for a bunch of years. Like we could say the same thing here in Chicago. Man, between Mitchell Trubisky and Justin Fields, there was zero chill and no patience to rush both those guys onto the field as soon as they got there.
But that's what I meant.
The Bears tried to chill. Nobody around here really wanted to hear that, though. They wanted to see those guys play right away.
Why? Yeah. Why Andy Dalton? Yeah. Why is he here? Give it to Justin Fields. Yeah, no, but that's exactly what I'm talking about. Where in the present. You know, a team like the Vikings who isn't necessarily trying to win the NFC North. I'm sure they are in their own minds, but they probably aren't. And then they could say, okay, hey, check it out. Justin Jefferson's going to be pissed if you don't throw him the ball 12 times.
Mm.
Target him. Dump it off to your running back that we got, Aaron Jones. You know, let's run the ball. Do that. Like, more so that instead of, hey, we got J.J. McCarthy, throw the ball 29 times a game, and we need you to throw for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns.
I think that sounds good. That's just not how these things usually tend to work.
And that's my point. So
I think in the Vikings example, the fact that they went out and got Sam Darnold, and Sam Darnold is not some, like, he's basically the previous iteration of Justin Fields,
right.
Dealing with that New York media market, being a really talented college quarterback who was kind of raw, but it looked like, man, he had some flashes. He had some really good games at times, even during his time with the Jets. But it just hasn't come all the way around. And I still got some high hopes for what Sam Darnold can be. Because when you look back at Sam Darnold's college tape, he was doing a lot of stuff at USC that's very similar to what Caleb Williams looks like right now. Like, he's not the same level of prospect. Sam Darnold went number 3 in the draft as opposed to number 1 for a reason. But, man, he had some amazing highlights. I caught a bunch of Sam Darnold's games at USC. He is a very talented player who, you know, he's got some Jay Cutler in him. He's got some bad habits, frankly, some of the bad habits that I think Caleb Williams will need to be trained out of once he gets into the NFL. But if Sam Darnold can refine his game, he's more than talented enough. So at least there is a veteran that's already there in Minnesota. So if it were the Vikings situation that a guy like J.J. McCarthy went into, there wouldn't need to be a feeling that you have to rush J.J. McCarthy onto the field right away. And the Vikings right outside the top 10 at number 11 right now, that sort of thing. A couple other positions with veterans in place who would maybe be placeholders, veteran placeholders for an up-and-coming J.J. McCarthy that I think could end up making sense.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And, of course, you know, Caleb Williams, to get rid of those bad habits, we don't know what they are. I don't know what they are. I'm not saying he does. I'm sure they exist, like Anthony Harris.
Oh, yeah.
And Kerry Joseph, who's the new quarterbacks coach for the Chicago Bears, is going to be tested. I love Kerry Joseph's story, where he played in the CFL, bounced around, won a Super MVP, kind of, you know, coached in certain situations, ended up being – came to the league as like a wide receiver and then like did a bunch of tasks. So I like a guy like Kerry Joseph because I feel as though he understands the quickness of the league, right? And I don't mean quickness, that's a terrible word to use. I don't mean quickness like the speed. I mean quickness like how fast you're in and how fast you're out and what he feels as though is valuable in those situations. He played the quarterback position at a high level, so he does know that as well. But I think it'll be good. I think he's going to be a really good fit for a guy like that. It's Gabe Ramirez. It's Anthony Herron. It's 670 to score. And you brought up, you know, being raw a couple times when you're talking about quarterbacks, whether it was Sam Darnold, J.J. McCarthy. And I'm trying to process that and because I'm thinking to myself, all quarterbacks coming out of college are raw to a certain degree, right? There's a certain percentage that exists.
Right.
So, but what would be a complete quarterback coming out of the draft versus a raw one? And or if a complete one even exists, like if that's even a possibility.
Yeah.
I want you to speak on that because I heard you saying raw, and I do feel that about a lot of quarterbacks.
Uh-huh.
But then what does complete look like is what I was trying to think on the other side.
The amount of reps, you were addressing now? You were going to break?
No. This is
the, the amount of reps a guy has had, the amount of games a guy has played matters so, so much. Yes, you will need to continue to refine your game, to improve your skills, and to hone your craft once you get to the NFL. But the time on task in college matters so much. I remember, you know, evaluating a game where it was Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence on the same field in the national championship game. And Joe Burrow was in his fifth year playing college football and, you know, multiple years that he was at LSU as a starter. And, you know, he was nothing to write home about after his junior season in Baton Rouge at LSU. And then he went to this other gear, this switch flip for him his final season there. Yes, surrounded by first-round talent and all these things. But the ability to make quick decisions, the ability to see the whole field in a moment's notice, and in certain ways, almost feeling like Joe Burrow can kind of see into the future, even though the defense he faced from Clemson had him under more duress in that game than even what LSU's defense was doing at the time to Trevor Lawrence in the game. But between the two, to me, that was a great example of two guys who we knew at that point, Joe Burrow was very likely to be the number one pick in that coming draft cycle, and Trevor Lawrence was going to be a year away from being the number one pick in the next draft cycle. But Trevor Lawrence, you know, started for 3 years in college, started as a freshman, sophomore, and junior. Joe Burrow, 5 years, couple of years older, had played more games, and you could just see the refinement of not being flustered by the opposing defense, knowing when those times were to just operate from within the pocket and read the field and get the ball out of his hands quickly while at the same time showcasing the ability as well when he's under duress to be a playmaker, to extend the play, to be on the move, and still having the playmaking ability to do each of those at a high level, whereas Trevor Lawrence still seemed a bit more frenetic, a little bit more helter-skelter in the way he was executing the quarterback position just in his second year as a starter. And I think that example of just the amount of time that Joe Burrow had spent just playing quarterback, practices, meetings, game action, high leverage game action, all that things adds up more and more. And that's where even the time someone spends as a backup, the conversation we have about quarterbacks in the NFL, we did it with Mitch Trubisky, we did it with Justin Fields, where we're thinking that because a young player is backing up a veteran, that they're getting nothing out of that. And it couldn't be further from the truth. You are still getting all the other 6 days of the week that we're not watching them, and then they get to game day and they're on the sideline. There's so much that goes into those other days where you are preparing to be a pro. You are watching that vet in front of you, and you're getting something from that. And frankly, just getting more comfortable with your surrounding environment. All those things end up mattering by the time you take the field. Now, everyone's learning curve is different. The S2 test score is going to be different from one guy to the next. So, no, not everyone is cut from the exact same cloth with these examples. But the time on task, the 10,000 hours that it takes to really be prepared to succeed when you get there, that matters a lot. So a quarterback who's played more in college, had more starts, handled bigger stages, faced better opponents, statistically, that does tend to lead you down a road where you can tell who's going to be the guy who's more prepared from day one. Doesn't necessarily guarantee long-term success or failure, but who's more prepared day one? The guys who've played more and faced better competition, those tend to be the guys statistically who you have a better hit or miss rate on. And even now we think like Bryce Young played a bunch of football, but he came out, you know, played some as a freshman, then started 2 years at Alabama, then he's in the NFL. There's a lot of football left for Bryce Young to play. I was just talking to Lincoln Riley, the college coach for Caleb Williams, in all 3 years. Caleb Williams has a lot of football left to play. He has played football for 3 years since he left high school. Yeah, he's really good. He's really talented, but he's got a lot of refining to do because he's only been playing the game for so long. 12, 15 years ago, he'd be a fifth year, at least a fourth year player, maybe a fifth year player because he'd redshirt, he'd start for a few years, then he'd enter the National Football League. There's just so much less time on task now that guys are being evaluated based on as they enter the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, that's it, man. That's what complete looks like. And it's just so funny, Ant, that, you know, certain teams value things differently, right? Where some teams say, like, he's raw, Lucas Van Ness, Mitch Trubisky. Like, oh, we can't. His ceiling is so high. And they put a higher value on that than where they might look at a Deshaun Watson and say he's more complete, to your point, what you're saying, more time on task, more high-leverage games, more reps. But they'll say, oh, well, he's already reached or he's near his peak. He's near that, and so therefore he's going to plateau sooner. And so we might value the rawness of someone, you know, more. Or, you know, it's just interesting how teams view those things because – it's not only just the players, but it's also, you know, those other variables out there that you have to come in, which is, again, that's why the draft is such a difficult
thing. But even in the C.J. Stroud example, there are passing concepts that he ran in Ryan Day's offense at Ohio State that the Houston Texans said, let's do the stuff C.J. Stroud does well. It's not the Ryan Day offense that they're running at the Houston Texans, but some of those very similar concepts, the route combinations, the timing, the drops that C.J. Stroud was doing in college, he got to be a little bit of a part of that conversation, but they just evaluated that as well on the front end and knowing here's what we can marry. If we bring C.J. Stroud in, we can marry what we want to do with what he's done and now give him an opportunity to be comfortable executing things he's already executed at the previous level. The entire NFL just hasn't gotten comfortable doing that yet, but that does give the modern quarterback that hasn't played as long, whose game isn't all around as refined, it gives them a better chance to hit the ground running because they're doing what they've done before.
It seems so elementary, right? Take care of your quarterback. Yeah. Talk to him. What does he do well? Yeah. All right, let's just, okay, fine. You can't just say, oh, you did it in college. We don't do that here no more. Mm-hmm. No, you did it in college. You did that well. I want to help you. You're familiar with this route tree, like you said, in this particular play. Yeah, let's throw that in 2-3 times so that way we got some for sure plays for you that you've been running. And like you said, time on task, you're going to be even better running them in the pros. It's great stuff right there. All right, coming up next, we're going to have some great stuff from Bruce Levine. He's going to talk to us about the Cubs. Of course, we're leading you guys right into Cubs spring training game. Cubs taking on the Diamondbacks. Don't worry, Sean. I got you, bro. I know exactly what it is. Sean Sears is a Cubs fan. Who, when he works with me, he just lets me know how much I don't know about the Cubs. Wow, no shots either. Wow. I even set you up, gave you a space for that. All right, Bruce Levine hangs out with us next. Don't go anywhere. It's Gabe Ramirez. It's Anthony Herron. It's 670 The Score.
There are still tickets available. It's going to be fire, I'm telling you.
We're back live with more of Anthony Herron and Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Valencia peers in, gets the side for the catcher, Hudson, looks at second, and delivers the pitch. Bouncing ball hit to first, fielded by Mervis, underhand, tossed to Palencia, covering the bag, and that is out number three. Ball game over, Cubs win. They beat the Rangers 8-6.
Gabe Ramirez, Anthony Herron, hanging out here on 670 The Score, leading you right into Cubs baseball. Cubs taking on the Arizona Diamondbacks in just a second. Zach Zabin, the guy who you just heard there, the beautiful vocals of Zach Zabin. He'll be on the call again with Ron Coomer. But right now we get a chance to talk a little bit about the Cubbies as they wind down spring training, gearing up for opening day, April 1st. Should be good. We got our next guest hanging out on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. It is none other than the legendary Bruce Levine. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Guys, always a pleasure being with you. What's up today? Where are we going with the Cubs? What do you want to talk about?
I think for me personally, I'm just still interested in the rotation of the Cubs, Bruce. I mean, it seems like position players are set. Guys are there. We know some, you know, the young guys went down. But I'm still curious, specifically Sheldon Managa. I'm trying to figure out where I should be at when it comes to expectations on that pitcher specifically.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting how they handle him. The plan all along, because Japanese pitchers pitch every 6 days in Japan, is to slow roll him into rotation life in American baseball. So the idea that he'd be the fourth or fifth starter and get an extra day here and there. The Cubs have 3 off days in the first 15. So it was going to be strategically with Imanaga in mind, getting an extra day here and there, getting a spot starter in there once or twice, just to make sure that he gets assimilated to Major League Baseball the way he should. But with the injury to Tyone, it kind of changes things around because you don't have the luxury of having that extra pitcher in the bullpen that can be a spot starter. So you might not be able to have both Assad and Smiley as fifth or sixth starters, or one of them being the fifth starter. There is some solace in the fact that they have some depth and that they have Wicks and these other two guys, and they seem to be in pretty good shape because they're all stretched out from spring training. But to be able to have that plan for Imanaga as well as Tyone might be a little bit of a stretch.
With this being the first time that Craig Counsell has led the Cubs through a spring training, what's the combination here of having a number of veterans on the squad who they know will have to be contributors throughout the bulk of the season versus trying to make sure that folks are out there and operating in the way that he wants this team operating and kind of getting the work in just to sort of get used to whatever the managerial style of Craig Counsell will dictate for where the season goes? How have those two things been balanced?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch him and contrasting with the way that Ross ran his team. But I think you're going to see in the way that Counsell runs things is that he's all about having plans way ahead. He's about not necessarily having the same lineup every day, but certainly having an idea where people should bat or where they shouldn't to get the most out of them. You're going to see a guy that handles pitching extremely well, albeit if it's not injured. And again, the time of the year and the off days are going to dictate some of the way that they go about handling players as well. And again, 3 off days in April, the fact that sometimes you lose 2 or 3 games in April because of weather, conditions as to who starts games. At Wrigley Field, we know Wrigley Field in April and May, sometimes the biggest ballpark in the world because the wind's blowing in consistently, cold weather, uncomfortability, all those things go into mixing and matching, and we'll see how Counsell handles it. I do know that they're in good hands, and I think that, you know, with any degree of good luck as far as health goes, Cubs should be a pretty competitive team.
We're talking to Bruce Levine here on 670 The Score. Gabe Ramirez along with Anthony Herron. You know, you're mentioning pitching, Bruce, and, you know, Keegan Thompson just got optioned as well 2 days ago. I looked at him as someone who, you know, could have been a nice contributor to this squad. I was surprised by the optioning.
Well, he had lost favor with the Cubs, you know, a year ago, and he spent most of the year last year in the minor leagues. Before that, as you say, Gabe, he was one of the better relief pitchers they had in 2022. I mean, he really did just about everything they needed him to in a lot of different roles, but he lost his mojo along the way, and he really hasn't gotten it back as far as they're concerned. The mojo here is command of his pitches. So he's a viable arm. He'll be down there. Obviously, you know, you need a lot of different guys as the season progresses. It's not just the 13-man pitching staff that you start off the beginning of the year.
Bruce, I was also surprised at the Matt Mervis going down to AAA as well. I understand there's, you know, a clog in front of him at first base, but he just struck me as someone, maybe it's because I just, you know, got on board with him last year when he came up, and I believed the hype, and so therefore there's this lingering thing in my head that wants to, you know, really be rooting for a guy like Matt Mervis.
Well, what does it tell you, Gabe, when a team goes out and trades for another all-star first baseman from another organization?
Yeah.
Does it tell you that they believe that he's going to be their answer?
Maybe they want to make, you know, the Iowa Cubs, you know, a strong team.
I think they will be strong. And you know what? I'm not writing off Mervis. I'm not saying that because he had a bad 6 weeks in the major leagues that he's no longer a viable young player moving forward. I just think he needed more experience, and he's going to get it That doesn't mean he's not going to be there. So, again, Bush, they're hoping, is the everyday first baseman. They hope he's a 25 home run guy and a 80 to 90 RBI guy and is a big left-handed bat in that lineup. But we'll have to see how it goes. This is a, you know, introduction to him into full-time Major League Baseball work. So we'll have to see. But they have other questions they have to answer. And, you know, they have a couple of guys in David Peralta, a left-handed hitter, and Dominic Smith, a left-handed hitter, that are in camp as non-roster Major League left-handed hitters. One's a first baseman, one's an outfielder. They're going to have to make a decision on them here in the next week as to whether they're going to be a part of the team. And that's going to impact, you know, some of the rest of the roster. They're going to have to decide on another outfielder. Is it going to be Davis? Is it going to be Brendan Davis? Is it going to be, you know, somebody like Alcantara? Is it going to be somebody like Canario? That's outfielder. I don't think it's Alcantara. Not enough innings in yet, not enough time in. But will Canario or Davis be the backup center fielder? Certainly you're going to need a right-handed hitting outfielder, and one of those two guys is probably going to make the team. So there's roster moves to be made and looked at here as we approach going into next week, which will be the end of the spring training and baseball starting for real on the 28th of March.
So Gabe was just lamenting earlier to me his struggles playing the hot corner back during his baseball career.
Back when I was 10,
back
Bruce.
In the day.
I'd like some video of that.
I would love some too, Bruce. Yeah. It is a little bit different leverage for a 10-year-old than Christopher Morel is going to deal with here in Major League. So I'm wondering how much patience will the Cubs need to exude with what you've seen so far in spring training? And how much will they be willing to exude as Christopher Morel just tries to figure this thing out?
Yeah, those are good, really good questions, Anthony, because I think the patience that they need to have is just tell the guy he's the everyday third baseman, not make him look over his shoulder, which could impact the way he goes about his job every day. They basically have tried to tell him that, but there's plenty of work to be done. Mechanically, he's not perfect at that position. There's a big difference, I think, and people make this mistake all the time, I believe, between being an athletic player in sports and a fundamentally good player,
right?
Okay? And we're trying to find out if we know that Morel can run. We know that he has tremendous bat speed. We know he's full of energy. But we don't know if mechanically he can handle a position on a daily basis, which is adequate for a major league player. I hope they live with his mistakes for a long time at the beginning of the year, just because I think at third base you can. You know, all eyes will be on him. But again, the athlete has to be able to relax at his position, go out there. This is a talented hitting guy, a guy that has bat speed that very few players in Major League Baseball have. He is very capable of hitting 35 to 50 home runs in the major leagues. He's very capable of, you know, producing 70 to 80 extra base hits. I hope he gets the opportunity to do that. He's not a finished product, but I think everybody feels really good about where he's at and the opportunity he's getting right now.
Bruce, like you, I was very proud of our good friend Lou Canellis for asking that tough question to Sammy Sosa in the midst of a impromptu, you know, kind of speak right there. What was your take on Sammy, and how much closer are we to seeing, you know, Sammy having an active role in Chicago Cubdom?
Well, it's going to have to be, it's always had to be straightened out between Sammy Sosa and Tom Ricketts and Crane Kenny, okay? Until Sammy, and again, this is what Tom has said many times, until he's willing to admit the mistakes that he made, he's not welcome back. Things have not changed. Sammy has been more aggressive now. He came to this card show over the weekend. He said he's going to be spending more time in Chicago, so he's going to be around. I don't know if that means he's coming out to games. I don't think he'll be invited to any, but he can come out and buy a ticket. I think he's going to try to force his way back into the organization. Tom has been, you know, really adamant about the fact that Sammy made mistakes. He has to admit them. Sammy, to his credit, during some of those conversations with Jared Payton and some of the other guys like Lou and Mike Berman, talked about having made mistakes, okay? I thought with Jared Payton, he had a nice interview with him, and he talked about the fact that, you know, as a more mature person, he knows he made the mistakes. Now, the question is he willing to make those mistakes? Will he be able to tell you those mistakes and what they were and why he's sorry about them? Until he's ready to do that, I don't think there's any movement between the Cubs and Sammy Sosa. Tom is pretty much dug in on this. It's not like he hates Sammy or has anything personal against him. He just feels, as owner of the Cubs, that he has the right to have Sammy admit some of his prior transgressions. And at that point, they could probably move on.
Yeah. It's going to be a tough conversation. One that
I know Cub fans, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think Cub fans just say, just let him back in?
Well,
you know,
I think 10 years here,
he was the only reason to come and watch.
Yeah.
He did steroids, but he's certainly not the only one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Cubs fans, it's one of those situations, Bruce, where I think most people feel like, hey, we know he did it. It's all good.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Cub management is like, yeah, but we're here and it feels icky, so we're at a crossroads here. It has to be one or the other. So I think management feels one way, and I think the fan base feels another, ultimately.
Yeah, I don't know if Sammy has it within him to say, yes, all along I did steroids, and what you saw wasn't real.
It's too hard. Hard to backtrack and admit.
You know, again, he was a great player without the steroids. He was going to be a 30-30 guy for any number of years without having done steroids. So I just think that punishing him, Clemens, and Bonds is always the wrong thing because they had superior talent to begin with. They just happened to stand out way too much when it came to making the game look like a video game.
Bruce, appreciate you as always. Great stuff. I look forward to continuing the Sammy conversation with you as well.
All right, guys. Have a great night.
Thanks, Bruce. Levine hanging out with us here on 670 The Score. Right as we say our hasta luegos.
Oh, yeah.
Want to thank our guest for today, Sam Monson from PFF, also Bruce Levine, who you just heard right there. Want to thank our producer today, Sean Sears, doing a fantastic job. That's him laughing at his joke that he made about the Sox earlier. Schifrin, I like you, bro, but no one believes you, even the Sox fans. It's like, Sox are going to get the tickets, blah, blah, they're hot. I don't know about that. All right, a ticket that is hot in Arizona, that is. Diamondbacks. Did that on purpose, Sean. That was for you. Cubs, Diamondbacks, starting just a little bit. Zach Zabin, Ron Coomer got the call. Don't go anywhere for that one, all right? Mi gente, that means my people. Hasta la próxima, that means until next time. I am Gabe Ramirez. He is Anthony Herron.
Yeah.
And this is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.